So they wanted to help you go in a positive direction. Because often you'll hear about people go to jail and it kind of makes them almost a super criminal because they get educated down that way. So for you, it was, here's how you can turn your life around and change things. After that, you come out of jail. What's that period like for you? What's the readjustment like?
Poverty.
Poverty.
Felony. I mean, you can only imagine. When I was used to acquiring a certain amount of money, not even just economically, anybody. If you're used to having a job that pays you $50,000 to $60,000 a year, and then you got to go to a job that pays you $20,000, it's hard to adjust.
Completely different world.
Completely different world. So I had to adjust to the world, and I had a hard time with it.
Mm-hmm.
I got to be honest, I had a hard time with it. I tried my hardest.
So what happened at that point when you're adjusting?
I worked two jobs. I went to school.
Mm-hmm.
I end up getting married, I'm having children.
Okay.
Responsibility came in, and the things that I was able to accomplish once those responsibility came were limited.
Mm-hmm.
Due to the fact that I had a felony,
okay.
Had a family. I mean, with the felony, it takes away so much of your rights.
Mm-hmm.
If you never had one, you don't know what you're stripped from.
Sure.
So people need to know that, you can't. It's hard to go into prison, come back out here in society after you rehabilitate yourself, and then you're incarcerated again by trying to live.
So people will put you in a box because
of that. Definitely in a box. Like, they want you to make $740 and you got five children and you got child support.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you eat and feed your family? It's almost like back to survival mode.
Right.
So it's a catch-22. Like, because you get punished for your crime.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you go to prison,
mm-hmm.
and you come home, do your time,
mm-hmm.
and you punished again.
So you had you'd gone back to jail as well then, correct?
Yep.
And what led to that? What happened?
I lost my spirituality.
Okay.
I learned my spirituality on my first time away.
Mm-hmm.
I became Muslim. I got more in tune with my Creator.
Mm-hmm.
And I left. I was strong for my first couple years home.
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly but surely, I started slipping away.
Okay.
I stopped offering my prayers regularly. I stopped, people go to church. I stopped going to the masjid.
Mm-hmm.
So my spiritual essence,
mm-hmm.
was being stripped away from me by the pressures of life.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of going to the Creator, I was running from him.
Okay.
And that was my test. And, I understood it, but I fought it.
Okay. So you kind of strayed from the path you were on that was a positive path.
Definitely.
And what was it that ended up sending you back to jail?
Possession of a firearm.
Okay.
Yep, I had a felon in possession of a firearm.
Okay. And what was it like the second time in for you?
A master's degree.
A master's degree.
Definitely.
Okay.
In spirituality and in economic injustice and in community activism.
So you're in there the second time. Who takes you under their wing? Who helps you, get things turned around permanently for yourself?
I mean, it was me wanting the change. When I went to where I was at, that's how I ran into Life Connections. Life Connections was an 18-month program.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Life Connections, and it was an 18-month residential program when I was incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
And I signed up for it. I was there in April. I was in the program in June. So I knew it was a God's mission from there on out. I knew it was a purpose in my life.
Mm-hmm.
That was when my change came. And when I was in Life Connections, the things that they taught us first about the spiritual self and connecting to whatever your spiritual essence may be,
mm-hmm.
they just wanted you to connect to something.
Okay.
And once you connected to something, they start giving you the tools to understand how they worked and how life works. And so they taught you the life skills, the etiquette, things that we wouldn't even, we don't have the privilege,
mm-hmm.
to know. Like, they give us the basics when you talk about schooling to become an employee.
Sure.
But they don't give us the essence of becoming human beings living life after school.
Okay.
So I was able to be taught those things, but I didn't understand why it had to be prison.
Okay. Now, you began working for your family's business, Gillespie Funeral Home. What's that been like for you?
It's been positive.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle's been very instrumental in this time here. He's been allowing us to get more acclimated into the business. Our words count now.
Mm-hmm.
And before we was a part of it, it was his way or the highway. Now he's in the transitional mode of passing down the torch to his son, his daughter, and me, myself.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a beautiful thing. It's a back to the family structure to create legacy, to show the city of Grand Rapids that success can happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes it has to be within your reach before you to believe it.
And has that strong family foundation been key in keeping you on a positive path going forward?
Definitely.
Now, as far as Life Connections goes, what's your role in that these days?
Life Connection, I'm the director of operations, meaning I'm the guy that's in the community. I'm mm-hmm. the guy in the streets. I'm the guy building the relationships. I'm the face,
mm-hmm.
I could say, you know. But it's more behind me than just me. I'm just the face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have an executive director, Miss Danielle Key. She's very active in creating and building. She's a phenomenal woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to give her respect. Without her, Life Connections wouldn't really be existing. I'd just be out here striving, fighting a cause with no foundation.
Now, how have you been able to reach young kids and help them from going down a path of being in a gang?
I just been going to them in their space.
Mm-hmm.
I go to them. I don't expect them to come to me because it's new for them.
Mm-hmm.
Change is new and it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have to go somewhere to get change, it's definitely kind of difficult to be receptive. So sometimes I just go in their element where they're comfortable.
Sure.
And I go and I allow them to be them. And
sure.
I don't judge them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know what I mean, tell them. First I have to understand them before I can even help them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people want to help without no understanding. And it's a, you know what I mean, miscommunication coming. It's a difficulty to start mm-hmm. over from there.
Sure. And I suppose you kind of almost have two sides. I mean, with the kids, you've got the kids who have not gotten involved in the gang lifestyle. And then you've got the kids who are caught up in it. So what are you presenting to each of those? So if it's somebody young who's 13 or so who could be on the edge with going in, what do you show them? What do you present to them to, you know, kind of show them that they should go down more of a positive road?
I'll be the example. It said I show them the reality of it. I
mm-hmm.
give it to them. I don't sugarcoat anything. I don't live a life of sugarcoat because, you know, you try to hide something from a child, inevitably they're going to find it in some other way.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't hide anything. So I keep everything, as we say in the community, 100. You
okay.
know what I mean? And keeping it 100 is the best way I can put it because they already know.
Mm-hmm.
And if we act like our children don't know at 13, 14 about certain things that we try to hide from them,
mm-hmm.
then we are handicapping their lessons.
Right.
And I don't handicap their lessons. I teach them where they are,
mm-hmm.
no matter what the climate may be, how difficult it may seem.
Mm-hmm.
I have to strap my boots on, and sometimes I go back in my space
because mm-hmm.
I have a head of a lot of information, a lot of experience, and I can go back to that era.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember where I was at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I speak to them as if that I was in that time so I can relate.
Right.
Then I bring them out of that.
What about the ones who are already involved in it? They're already reaping the rewards. I mean, are they receptive to, you know, what you're sharing with them? Or are they just saying, you know, hey, it's not going to happen to me. I'm not going to go to jail. I'm not going to end up dead.
It's 50-50 because you got to understand people make choices. Everyone doesn't want to change.
Mm-hmm.
So you only I focus on those that's striving to change. Those that don't want to change, I try to reach someone that's close to them that wants change
mm-hmm.
and allow them to share their change with the ones that they look up to. So they end up coming around anyway because it's about being strategic. I play chess, not checkers. I'm not trying to just jump to pieces. I'm
sure.
trying to checkmate.
Right.
I'm trying to change lives.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to be able to make a safer community.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certain ways you have to do it. You can't just do it by black and white
mm-hmm.
or a structure because sometimes people live outside the structures. And if you can't reach them from that way, then you're going to have a difficulty.
Now, we were talking about earlier your friend Mike. You looked up to this guy. He, you know, kind of led you, you know, to want to be involved in gang life. What happened to him? Where's he these days?
Mike is incarcerated at the time, you know, still fighting to come home. You know,
in contact with him at all?
No, I haven't been in contact with him. I haven't been. We have fell out before I left.
Okay.
You know, regardless, you know how we men are. We men, you know, egos get in the way and, you know, conflict of misunderstanding. But, you know, I still love the brother, you know what I mean, no matter what. Like, it's not on my end we fell out, it's on his end. But, you know,
sure.
I allow time to, you know, make everything get better.